There's a really dangerous point during every single sales cycle. I don't care what you sell. I don't care how complicated it is. This exists for all of us. It is the point of the sales cycle where you and I are completely vulnerable. And you know what the best part is? Many of us underestimate this one simple thing that could make or break the deal. Today, we're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. All right, so before we get down to business, I want to make sure that you have taken full advantage of a really cool freebie that I've talked about quite a bit on my podcast, and it's the Sales Playbook app. And what's really cool about this app is that you have access, free access, by the way, to over 300 plus sales lessons. I want you to think about that. 300 plus sales lessons. I've been recording these sales lessons now for 7 years. So I've got over 300 of them for you. They're there for the taking. And a lot of the time people will say to me, well, what's the difference between downloading this app versus just going over to iTunes? You can certainly go over to iTunes. We're on iTunes, by the way, so it's nice and easy. You can even go over to Stitcher if you'd like. But one thing I know about iTunes is that they only will give you access to, what, about 20 episodes or whatever. I've been doing these podcasts now for 7 years, so there's just a lot there that you're going to be missing, like, I don't know, like 280 episodes. So if you never want to miss a beat, my advice to you would be to go to yoursalesplaybook.com/app, yoursalesplaybook.com/app. And when I say never miss a beat, what I mean by that is that I update and add new sales lessons at the rate of about 3 to 5 each and every month. So not only are you going to get access to 300 archived sales lessons that I have, you're going to never miss a beat going forward. So that to me, by the way, is way too much time for me to be like beating around the bush. I can't stand that on podcasts when people are just taking 3 years to get to the point. I mean, how many times have you been into a podcast? It's like, well, we're 12 minutes in and nobody has given me anything. So I'm kind of breaking my own rule now. So I think we need to get down to business. So what we're talking about today is the most dangerous point in any sales cycle. The most dangerous point. And you ready for it? I mean, I'm just going to put the cards on the table, tell you what it is. But more importantly, we got to talk about what you're going to do about it. You ready? It's the time between meetings. Why? Well, because, and it's going to sound like I'm an attention whore here when I tell you this, but when you're in a meeting, I mean, it's real easy for them to be thinking about what? You and your solution and making changes and all that kind of good stuff. But then the meeting ends. And all this other stuff creeps in, stealing their attention. What kind of stuff? Well, tons of distraction each and every single day. For example, the average person, you and I included, by the way, consumes 34 gigabytes of information every single day. And the way that I always like to let people like visualize that, it's the equivalent of a novel and a half each and every day. It's like reading a novel and a half each and every day, and every 4 days, it's like consuming War and Peace. How's that for a visual? I mean, that's a lot. Also, the average person sends and receives 110 emails each and every day. Now, when you think about that, all the information that we're involved in and consuming and sending emails and receiving emails, that's time when they're not thinking about you and your solution. But there's more to it. There's a lot of meetings. Especially some of you, man, you know what I'm talking about. I work for a company where it was just an asinine amount of meetings to the point where it's like, I don't think anybody was able to get anything done because you're always in meetings talking about it, which is kind of crazy, right? Also, think about how many phone calls this person that you're trying to sell to, or this team of people, a group of stakeholders, are involved in. Think about the fact that many of them, if they're decision makers, they have internal clients that they need to serve. Some of them have external clients that they need to serve. Also, think about all the interruptions, just each and every single day. I'm not talking about like times 7 days or like 2 weeks or whatever it is. I want you to think about it just on a daily basis because that's dramatic enough. And then feel free to multiply that by like a week or two. But think about all the interruptions. The average person, according to Wendy Cole, from an article she did in Time magazine, the average person is interrupted 7 times an hour, 56 times a day. The average person, according to Fast Company magazine, is exposed to over 3,000 advertising messages each and every day. Now, all these things that I just mentioned, right, all these distractions and the amount of stuff that we're consuming and all the internal meetings and internal clients that these people are serving, that was actually the good news. You ready for the bad news? The bad news, and by the way, you should be detecting the New York sarcasm there because that really wasn't good news. That's the better news. Now's the really grim news. Between meetings, you are completely vulnerable to stakeholders whispering in the ear of the decision maker and influencing that decision, right? Other stakeholders kind of tell him, hey, I didn't want to say anything in front of Paul. He seemed like a nice guy, but, you know, this is my concern. And, you know, you have like internal politics playing into it. You also have, you ready for this? God forbid we ever think about this. We have competitors doing the exact same thing. And many times feeding them the wrong information. You're also not there to keep them focused and moving forward and focused on the right things. So as a result of all of this, you have a deal that could very easily lose momentum. You have stakeholders that could lose urgency, lose interest. They could decide to move in a different direction. And you're not even there to protest it or to say, hey, you know, why don't you consider all of your options? You're not there. It's like tying your hands behind your back and they've gagged you, right? How's that for a visual? And also, too, you have a decision maker or a group of stakeholders that might decide that it's just easier to embrace, keep embracing the status quo and do nothing. It's nice and safe. You have people that might now start, they might begin to obsess over variables that could kill the deal for you. And also, too, it's dangerous for them, too, because these variables might not serve them very, very well, right? I mean, is it possible, I don't want you to think about this, that people make the wrong decision? And my definition of the wrong decision isn't necessarily that they've chosen not to go with Castain Training Systems and Paul Castain. It just means that they were focused on things and they became obsessed with things that really, in the whole scope of things, aren't very, very important, but they've been influenced to think that they are. Here's another thing that makes this period of time really a dangerous period of time. I really think that we can easily misinterpret the prospect's behavior and kind of, you know, take a message from them, right? Or our read of the situation is that they're not interested or they're losing interest and they've disconnected or whatever. Or maybe even, God forbid, that I talk about like prospects this way, we might even say, yeah, this person's really flaky. But meanwhile, the real thing that's going on is that they're just so damn busy and distracted. Now, what makes that scenario really, really dangerous is, you know, we have a little something called an ego in sales. So we might get really shitty about that, that somebody's not getting back to us and, you know, like, you know, how dare they not get back in touch with us? We're, you know, a $500 million company. And don't they know, you know, that, you know, Paul Castain was just ranked, you know, 26th on the top 100 sales trainers? How dare they, right? I mean, they have a hell of a nerve. So it puts us in a really dangerous type of scenario. So we could sit here and we can complain about it all day. Or let's talk about taking control of the deal, right? That's what this is about. And by the way, taking control in a way where we're not being controlling or manipulative or a pain in someone's ass. So I have, let me count them again, looks like a good 10 ideas for you. So if you haven't pulled the car over by now and gotten out your handy dandy journal or notebook, whatever it is that you'd like to capture some nuggets, I think now would be a good time because I've got a lot for you. So The very first thing that I want to teach you is really how to fish, right? Instead of just giving you a bunch of ideas, which I will do, by the way, because I like to spoil you guys. So aside from doing that, I want to teach you how to fish, and I want to get you thinking about what you can do. So what we need to do here is we need to keep or create a keep in touch plan. Now, I always refer to this with my coaching clients as a communication map. And all a communication map is really a keep in touch plan or a keep in touch campaign. And it just sounds a little bit more sophisticated, right? I mean, just like around saying, yeah, I've got to keep in touch plan. It just sounds kind of dicky, right? It just doesn't sound like I wouldn't take somebody serious that way. But if someone said, I've got to add that to my communication map, it's like, wow, do tell. What the devil is a communication map? Of course, at that point you say, well, you need to attend one of Uncle Paul's like incredible webinars to learn that, whatever. But you guys don't. You're going to get it right here on the podcast. So a communication plan is, or communication map, if you will, is basically thinking about all the different ways that we're going to keep in touch between meetings, but also really like taking into consideration the cadence, if you will, and, you know, kind of like a series of if-then statements. Well, if I call on this date to follow up and I don't hear back or I don't get in touch with them, then we'll do this move or whatever. But it's not going to be just calling to follow up. To me, this whole business of calling to quote-unquote check in makes you a me-too sales rep. There is no value in that at all, if you really think about it. And, you know, if people buy difference, and all of us, like if we were in like a sales meeting right now and I was your kickoff keynote speaker and I got up and I said, you know what, people buy difference and you've got to get out there and show your difference, right? You guys wouldn't like turn that away and say, well, that's really like a really bad idea. You would think that's a really good idea, but most people, they don't deliver on that. And they proceed to do the exact same things as their competitor and everybody else out there trying to sell your prospect something. And you just become this me too sales rep and you get lost in the sauce. And we don't want to do that. So the very first thing is a problem solving question. The problem solving question that I teach all of my coaching clients is a very simple fill in the blank question. I want you to write it down so that you could use it for anything to do with sales. You could even use it, heck, like things in your life. And it goes like this. In what ways can I? And then you fill in the blank. So let me say it again. In what ways can I? And you fill in the blank. Now here, the question is going to be, in what ways can I stay in touch between meetings without calling to check in? Let's say it again. In what ways can I stay in touch between meetings without calling to check in? And what I usually do when I am using this question, right, and I want to do some brainstorming, is I set a timer. And what I do is I'll set it for like 3 or 4 minutes and I will not allow any distractions during that point. I am focused on answering that question. I see that clock ticking and it's like to me, my brain like has this high degree of urgency now. So I'm just writing anything down that I can. And during the first round of brainstorming, I don't judge my answers. I don't care what I write down on that paper because it's really for my eyes only. I'm writing it down because one thing that you have to understand about brainstorming, whether it be someone else or especially yourself, you never want to put a message out that you're completely beating up an idea that somebody had because then you shut down the creative process. So whatever happens, it's almost like free form writing. I'm writing it. But next time around when I go through it again, I'm going to start to be really picky with my answers. So the very first way that you can stand out between meetings and that you can become less vulnerable is by thinking about it. And the question is, in what ways can I stay in touch between meetings without calling to check in? Now, if you'd like to kick that up a notch, there's something really cool that you can do. And what you can do is you could bring this question into your sales meeting, right? And I'm about to like go off on a tangent. See, I thought I was going to stop myself, but I'm going to do it. Sorry, I just can't hold back. I personally think that the average sales meeting sucks. I mean, it's horrible. We're pulling people out of the field, away from their money-making activities, to many times go through glorified admin things and things that could have been easily communicated through looking at somebody's CRM, pulling a report, an email, or whatever it is, and there's no value. So to me, to make a meeting more valuable, instead of going around the table and saying, Paul, what are your projections and what are your numbers and Mary, what are yours, and fooling yourself that Paul gives a shit about Mary's numbers and Mary gives a shit about Paul's numbers, what you should do is include an educational component, kind of like a team brainstorm and discussion. This is the perfect thing for that. So you could put this question out to your sales team. And the way that I would suggest that you do it is that you have everybody first answer the question in silence. And you time it like we talked about before. Set a timer, 3 to 4 minutes. After they finish going through this in silence, then go around and just say, you know, hey, Paul, give us 2 to 3 ideas that you came up with. Okay. Hey, Todd, why don't you give us like two things that you came up with or whatever, 2 to 3 ideas, and just kind of go around the table and then have everybody perhaps send it to you, and you could just compile one like PDF for everyone and give them a lot of ideas. This is how you leverage the brain power of your sales team. The only time that this would hurt you is if you have a team of idiots. Then you don't want to do this exercise. But I'm assuming that people are at least like moderately smart. So that way would be a good start for you. The second thing that you're going to do on this Keep in Touch campaign is before the end of any meeting that you have with a prospect, what I want you to do is assign homework. And I talk about this a lot. And what I mean by that is have action items that they need to do and you need to do. And the way that I always like suggest that you position this is as follows. Start with yourself. At the end of the meeting, you might say something like, well, Diane, I definitely have my homework cut out for me. By Tuesday, I promise I'm going to get you an outline of my coaching program and how it would work for 12 of your reps. I'm also going to put together just kind of, you know, a rough sketch of what a 2-day training, on-site training program would look like for your team, focusing on the 3 core areas that we talked about today. Now, fair is fair. There's some things that I want you to do for homework. One of the things we mentioned is that you need to get a rough idea if late August is going to work. So what I'd like you to do is go to your team and make sure that we don't have any vacation scheduled or whatever, and that the end of August is going to be a go. The other thing you had mentioned to me is that you needed to talk with 3 of your regional sales managers to get some answers to the questions that I had for you today that you weren't clear on, that you needed to get answers from the local level. And, you know, so that's kind of how that looks. But here's the thing that you want to do. And this is really important. In fact, I really want you to write this down. You don't ever assign homework to someone without tightening the leash, without jerking the leash, right? Tightening the leash and putting a day for completion, right? Like kind of like little milestones in there. So when I say something like that, I might say that, you know, one of the things that we discussed and I'd like you to get answers on, if you could find out some possible training dates for late August, is it doable that you could have that for me no later than Thursday the 22nd? So what I'm doing is I'm getting a series of commitments, which is also very important in a sale. You know, years ago when they were talking about this always be closing thing, that's really how I look at always be closing. I don't look at it like always trying, hey, you want to buy? Hey, you want to buy? Hey, you want to buy? That's being a pain in the ass. But when I look at ABCs and it's going to be grammatically incorrect, I look at it more like always be getting, right? I know I won't quit my day job to like write proper grammar, but always be getting commitments from people. So that keeps things going. And also too, I think it levels the playing field in terms of I again, forgive me if this is like my own insecurity, but I don't believe that the prospect should be put up on a pedestal any more than I don't believe they should be putting me up on a pedestal. I don't care if I suddenly become the only sales trainer in town and they're bleeding and I have like the proverbial tourniquet. I don't think they should be putting me up on a tourniquet. I believe in like equality. So that's one of the things that I'll do. But before every meeting, you want to go and assign that homework. Now, there's some reasons why you're going to do this homework, by the way, and I want to get into them very quickly. Number one, it keeps people engaged between meetings. Now they're thinking about you and your solution, but also it keeps you in control, doesn't it? Because you assigned the homework. It also, I think, psychologically gives a test drive and what it's like to work with each other. And again, psychologically, it sets the tone for a collaborative relationship where I'm doing certain things, you're doing certain things, we roll up our sleeves, we work on them together. What better way to test drive that than before checks are being written, right, and POs being issued? But also, it gives you, the aspiring sales rock star, an early warning system so that wouldn't it be cool if you can find the moment that somebody disengages and you don't like find out 3 weeks after the fact where it's like kind of so it is written, so it is done, and you are shit out of luck, right? So what we want to do is have that early warning system. So if I'm expecting Diane to get me some stuff by Thursday and Thursday comes and goes, I need to get on that. I don't need to wait 3 weeks and say, oh, by the way, 3 weeks ago, you know, you forgot to do this, this, and this. But now it gives me an early warning sign that Diane might be disengaging in this process. Diane might be moving in a different direction. And I want to be clear about this. We're not saying let's become like paranoid here. I'm not saying that at all. We're not saying, hey, let's become needy. I'm saying let's put something in place where we can, I do some things, you do some things, but we're going to know that moment when somebody might be starting to lose a little bit of interest. Next, number three, after each and every meeting that you have, what I want you to do is engage in a post-call planning session. Now, we talk about pre-call planning a lot, but I don't think we talk about post-call planning enough. What I mean by this, if you are going and running local appointments, this works best. When you work running like a local appointment, you get in your car, allow enough time between that appointment when you're scheduling, that appointment and the next appointment to kind of step back and replay that game tape of that meeting because it's going to be very helpful to you. And what I recommend you do is you leave it. Don't hang out in the parking lot. That's freaking creepy. Just like go somewhere, have a cup of coffee, and think it through. Now, after each and every meeting, what I do is I think of something that was taught to me in a public speaking context. When I was learning how to be a speaker and kind of conquer my nerves and all that, back when Uncle Paul had hair and wore a younger man's clothes, as Billy Joel once said quite eloquently, I was taught that there are essentially three presentations. And I want you to write this down. There are essentially three presentations. There is the presentation, right? Or you could say three demos, whatever you want, but the three presentations. Number one, it's the one that you planned on giving. So I have an appointment with Derek, and I plan on going over our X1000 widget, stopping and asking some members there what their thoughts are, maybe getting them involved in the demo so that they see how easy it is or whatever it is. But whatever it is I plan to do in that presentation or demo, that's the first element that you need to like be thinking about. So there's this is the presentation I plan to have. Then number two, it's the presentation that you actually had. I plan to do this, but you know, all of a sudden the CEO walked in, man, and all of a sudden we're talking about top line and bottom line and TPS reports and all that kind of stuff. But the third one is the most important one, and this is the one I want you to circle. It's the presentation that when all is said and done that you wish that you had. So while it's fresh in your head, I want you to take that time after your meetings to kind of assess that and say, you know, I really wished that it would have went this way. You know, what could I have done better? What did I do right? There's that kind of personal critique where you have to ask your ego to leave the car, right? Get out, grow legs, you know, I'll pick you up later. But, you know, daddy needs a little alone time, ego, right? And you've got to think about this and think about what you could have done better. But then you also have to think back while it's fresh and think about that meeting, about the various nuances that you might have missed. Was there a look, perhaps, that somebody shot somebody else in that meeting when you said something? Was there a point where maybe people perked up when you said something or did something or presented something? Was there something in your program that, you know, kind of, remember in Blazing Saddles when like people in the crowd were going harumph, 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 or whatever, you know, like, was there something that got the harumphs going? You want to think about that, but you also want to think back, you know, did I fail to include somebody? And sometimes it's that quietest person because like all the alpha males are taking over the meeting. But I found that many times it's that introvert that later on, the minute you leave, is whispering somebody's ear and can derail this whole deal. And plus, you know, I mean, who the heck wants to feel like they've been like somebody didn't validate them in a meeting? So I think about things like that. I think about and this is really important. I think about my action plan from there. And this is where this whole communication plan is going to come in. I think about everything that I have to do. Of course, I'm thinking about that homework that we just agreed upon. But I'm thinking in terms of, okay, what am I going to do from here in this communication map? Next item, number four. I send, and forgive me, you can say duh, but for every person, let's be honest here. For every 10 people that say duh to what I'm about to offer to you as a sales tip, I bet you I can find 7 to 8 people that aren't doing this, but they're saying duh, right? And that happens a lot in sales. We say, that's sales 101. That's basic. That's too easy, whatever it is. Great, are you doing it? No. Then shut the F up. Seriously. I mean, like, do it. Like, I could tell you all kinds of shit that I think is basic, but, you know, sometimes you have to man up and say, yeah, but I'm not doing it. I know I'm supposed to be doing it, but I'm not. You ready for this? Like a thank you note, a handwritten one. Like usually when I say, hey, you got to send a thank you note or a thank you card, usually I get eye rolls like, oh my God, I can't believe like we're paying this like asshat to say that. But also, you know, I have people say, well, yeah, I do that already. Yeah, what do? I send an email. No, no, no. That is a me too gesture. That is a me too gesture that you do in order to be regarded as a me too sales rep. You are not a me too sales rep. Therefore, you don't engage in the same things that your competitors do. It's all these little things that will set the difference. So you do a handwritten note. It will take all of like 5 minutes out of your life. Seriously. All of 5 minutes out of your life to properly thank someone and send it along. Next, number five, forgive me for this one too, kind of obvious. And, you know, some of you are going to say, yeah, you know, this is something I do before my meetings or whatever. But just kind of a little quick little like checklist item. Make sure that if you haven't sent a LinkedIn invitation by this point, that you've done so. And one of the little rules of thumb, whether you do it before your meeting and send a LinkedIn invitation or afterwards, right? I prefer to do it after the meeting. Because it's one more touch point. It's one more way that we, quote unquote, bump into each other. One more moment to create top of mind awareness. Now, one little trick. Whenever you send that invite, the first thing that you need to do before you send the invite, and you're looking through their profile, right where it gives you the invitation to, the option to invite them, on the desktop version, there is a drop-down menu. And on the iPhone version, which is what I have, right, on the app for LinkedIn, I believe, and it's still this way, I just do this so often, I'm not even, it's more of a like a reflex for me, but I believe in the top right-hand corner there should be 3 dots, and you press the 3 dots, and that gives you options to like customize the invitation, which you should be doing, but it also gives you the option to follow somebody. You're going to follow them regardless. Here's why. Because if somebody doesn't accept your invitation, you're not going to be able to see really their updates showing up in your stream. And we always want to create set it and forget it mechanisms when it comes to information. So that information is coming to us instead of us always having to go and chase after the info, right? So we want information coming to us. So when you follow somebody in the meantime, what happens is that if they're posting things and they haven't like screwed with their privacy settings, you're going to see it in your status updates. And that's an important thing. The other thing that I'm doing, obviously, is if I'm following you or even connected with you, it gives me an idea because I'll see like little alerts that you're saying this or doing that or whatever. But also, I'm looking for additional icebreakers, and I might learn something about you. You might learn something about me. Plus, I want you bumping into me because part of what we're supposed to be doing as sales professionals is demonstrating our expertise. And giving people, and please write this down, giving people the opportunity to kind of quote-unquote admire us from afar. I think we're living in that world now, by the way, where people like to kind of check us out online and check out that footprint and the trail that we've left. And it gives people an opportunity to see how smart we are and what we stand for and how we interact and things like that. So I would take full advantage of that. The next thing that you want to do, item number six, is you want to make sure that not only during your meetings, but especially between meetings, you want to be providing evidence. Providing evidence. Now, evidence really consists of different things that you can offer to reduce skepticism, reduce hesitation, reduce the probability of objections, reduce doubt. These are the things that cause us to stall out. These are the things that start as a seed and go full bloom by the end of the sales cycle. So what we want to do is provide evidence throughout the entire sales cycle. And there's different forms of evidence. I'm not going to give every one of them away to you because I'm actually going to be teaching it in the webinar that we're going to be doing on the 18th, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. But, you know, I just want to give you a few ideas to get you thinking. It could be things like testimonials. It could be things like providing facts for people. It could be, and this one I want to talk about, one of my favorite ones, is providing physical evidence, like a sample of something. And the examples that I give continually on this comes from a rep who was ranked second worldwide out of about 350 sales reps. I always talk about Tom. He was my sales manager way, way back when I didn't even have a bald spot back then, by the way. That's how freaking long ago it was. And I got the opportunity to observe him in action. And I'll never forget, we were walking into this meeting one time, and he's bringing a piece of carry-on luggage into the meeting. I go, "What's going on, man? Are you like going on the lam after this or something?" And he's like, "No, I keep all my props in here, my sales props." And I didn't get a chance to like ask him what he meant because we were walking in the door, and next thing you know, there we are. Now, what he meant by this is that he had physical evidence in there that made a lot of the intangible things that we offered tangible so that people could say, "Ah, that's what that looks like." And that they could kind of, you know what I mean, get a visual and we could cement a selling point. Think about it. A selling point that allows you to have a tangible feel of it is really a selling point, right? And now it's because it's a selling point that's realized and internalized. So a few examples of what Tom would do. When he was talking about our quality control program, what he did was he showed samples of the internal forms and checklists and schedules and, you know, flow charts and stuff that we did. And he explained it like almost like a story, like he was telling a story about each and every prop. He did it in an entertaining way. So it wasn't like, you know, overkill or anything. But then when he talked about the insurance that we had, because we had like by far the most comprehensive insurance plan in the industry. And we had about $30 million worth of coverage, which I think our next nearest competitor might have been at 12 or 15 million. And when he explained it to people, he showed the certificate of insurance. Insurance is an intangible thing. What the hell does insurance look like? Tom did a great job of letting you see kind of what it looked like and something that represented the insurance. When he talked about how well our franchise owners were trained, he would pull out like a training manual and say, this is one of three or four or five, whatever it was a long time ago. He'd pull out a DVD. This is one of seven reinforcement DVDs we give everyone. He even took out the test that they have to pass at the end, the written part, and then he went through the actual like part where they had to demonstrate their ability. And he really did a great job of having people visualize what it looked like. But the best part of what Tom did, and what I always tell the coaching clients that I have, is that when you do this right and you have a lot of really cool props like this, and you have those samples and that physical evidence, by the time you're done, it reminds me of, in a good way, by the way, of like the end of an infomercial, where they're showing you all this cool shit that you're going to get. But wait, you're also going to get, you know, like this, the seven Ginzu knives, and you're going to get the knife sharpener. You're going to get the flamethrower and the Uncle Paul poster and the, you know, like they're going through all this stuff. And you look and you see all this stuff spread out. By the time we would get done with the meetings, you'd see all these props spread out. And basically, what he said to me, like when we were heading back to the car, he said, in that moment, I'm sure that they're saying to themselves, this is what a proper program should look like. And I want you to think about that. I want you to really hear those words. This is what a program should look like. Not what it should sound like, which is what we've done, right, usually in our meetings, but give them that visual representation. So I want you to think about that. But the other thing that I want you to do is, and let's kind of do a timeout here, and this is something, forgive me, I probably should have said it a little bit earlier, but when you're thinking about your communication map, your keep in touch campaign, if you will, you need to think about what selling points, what pieces of physical evidence, what forms of evidence should be repeated throughout the process. Now, why would we ever repeat things? Well, it goes back to what I said before. The average person right now has about an 8-second attention span. So they might have been with you in one of those meetings that you had, but there's a high probability that they forgot about it. So you want to repeat things throughout the process. In fact, what you want to do is repeat it in a way that it doesn't seem like you're being repetitious. And it's, you know, and it's funny too, because we've been around repetition our entire life, because the whole advertising industry is based on that. Think about commercials, right? They're constantly saying that, right? They're constantly taking a point and they're making sure that it gets driven home. I'm going to give an example kind of against my better judgment, but I want to give it anyway. But I want you to think back, and I'm not going to get political on you, just a general observation. I want you to think back to the political debates back in the fall of 2016 here in the U.S. when you had your candidates there. Each one of them did a very good job of this, by the way. What they did was, you knew that there was points that they had to make, and they made sure that they slammed them home several times throughout that debate. Not once, not twice. I bet you if we kept count of certain key phrases and, you know, certain sound bites and certain just selling points, if you will, I bet you that they each just like drilled those points home a good dozen times. But it didn't stop there at the campaign. It continued in their social media work. It continued when they were doing press conferences. So repetition, and I want you to write this down, is not only, but I'm doing that a lot today. I want you to write this down. I'm sorry. See, there's me with the repetition. Maybe you'll write the shit down now. See, that's me practicing what I preach. But we know that repetition is the mother of skill. But you see, I look at it like a little bit differently. I think repetition is also the mother of brand. So whatever it is you say and do repeatedly and consistently throughout the sales cycle becomes associated to you and your product and your solution. So therefore, repetition is the mother of brand. So one of the things that you might want to think about when you're having a little thinking time, and I hope you give yourself that gift, and you have a little quiet thinking time. For me, beautiful time here. I'll be doing it today. It's Sunday, Mother's Day. Mrs. Uncle Paul is out and about having a little bit of time for herself. A little bit later on, cooking her a nice dinner, which you guys would never know that I like to cook because I'm in such incredible shape here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have a little bit of kind of me time as well after this podcast. And I'm going to be thinking about different things that I need to be working on and different lessons and stuff that, like, I don't mean lessons to teach you guys, lessons that, like, I need to be learning as a humble student of sales. So one of the things that I recommend that you do is have a little bit of quiet time and think about, well, how can, like, what are the things, the messages that I need to repeat throughout the sales cycle? How will I repeat them in a way that it doesn't seem overly repetitious, where it's like, does that guy not have anything else to say? This is all like you say good morning and you say, oh, by the way, the best-selling point of our X1000 is its durability. And then you say, okay, hey, thanks for the proposal. Oh, guess what? The best-selling point. Like, I don't mean that kind of repetition. I mean kind of doing it without seeming like you're repeating it. But also, what evidence do you have that you can continue to reinforce and let people see and experience throughout the sales process? Now, the rest of these things are kind of easy. That's kind of like the lengthiest stuff that I've given you there. The next idea, I don't know if we're up to number 7 or 8, and hell, we might not even do 10 today, we might do 11. But also too, how about calling somebody with a question of some sort? I don't mean calling up and like the equivalent of like, you know, like a question like a 2 or 3 year old would call up and, you know, okay, you know, daddy, you know, which way is up? I don't mean like shit like that. I mean, you know, a question that's like an intelligent question that gets them thinking even. So I want you to give some thought to that as well. Calling them with a question. Isn't that a hell of a lot better than I'm calling to check in with you? How about calling them with an idea? Or emailing them with an idea, communicating an idea to them somehow, right? Now, number 9, sending along a resource. No strings attached resource, sending along something that you think could be helpful, an article. It could be something that you're forwarding to them or whatever. The thing that I want to point out here is don't, throughout this entire process, don't rely just on the phone and just on email. Part of the way that you're going to seem like you're not being a pain in the ass is by varying the different forms of outreach that you use and understanding that each form of outreach gives you things at your disposal that the other forms don't. Like if I send something to you through snail mail or FedEx, I get to provide you with physical evidence that I really can't do through an email. How about, in fact, this is my favorite one now, number 10. How about something creative? Something creative to help you stand out, something more memorable. How about a behind-the-scenes video? And maybe you take them on a tour. Maybe you introduce them to some of the people that are going to be working in the background and just kind of bring that to life. I mean, I have one client who did something really, really cool. What they did was they sent along this video, a behind-the-scenes video. They had it all worked out with their president ahead of time. And they stopped by different departments. They introduced themselves. Each person knew to call the prospect by name. They got to the president's office. The president said something like, let's say he's talking to Paul Castain. Hey, Paul, it's, you know, James Smith from ABC Company, and needless to say, Phyllis has been talking lots about you, and you know, we're thrilled that you're considering us, and blah, 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 and you know, I wanted to make myself personally available to you. If you have any questions, I mean, I'm the founder of the company. If you have any questions, I want you to feel free to give me a call, and they just had it flash up on the screen, his direct line, I thought was kind of cool. But they also then packaged this in a kit that gave them kind of like flavors of like the local market, like some cool things from the local area so that they could get to know them in a warm and welcoming type of fashion. Now, let's just stop there for a second. Do you really think if you were to send that, something like that, to your prospect, that they would say, and here comes my corny joke that I say every time, oh, that's a terrific gesture. You know what? Just put it in the pile with all the other ones I received this week. You are going to be it. You are going to stand out from that moment on. Also, how about, I mean, you know, like maybe some kind of video where you're talking with them and you're saying something to them or whatever it is. That could be very, very helpful. You could embed that in a video. But here's the point of all of this. The point of a good keep in touch campaign, the point of this communication mapping that I've been laying out today, is to establish propinquity. You and I need to have propinquity established. Propinquity precedes the know, like, and trust thing that we always say. People do business with people they know, like, and trust. Yeah, propinquity precedes that, and it puts the other three things on steroids and 10Xs it. So propinquity is establishing a vibe with people of nearness and closeness and kinship. And, you know, that's kind of the Merriam-Webster portion of it. But the Paul Castain version of that, to me, it's the literal bumping into that we experience with people and that good feeling that we have. Almost like running into a neighbor. You're out for a walk. You run into your neighbor and you do what Larry David likes to call a stop and chat. You got to talk with them for a minute or two. It's not creepy. It's not intrusive. And everybody wishes each other a nice day and you move on. Maybe a few days or a week later, you've run into each other up at the market, right? And you stop and you chat. And when you leave, you know them a little bit better. Maybe another time you're out with your significant other. Hey, there's your neighbor. You go over, you say a quick hello. Maybe there's somebody there from out of town and their family. Oh, hey, I want you to meet, you know, my Uncle Charlie, blah, blah, blah. But each and every time, we create this sense of familiarity. And that's what we should be doing throughout the sales cycle. So there you have it, folks. 10, 11 ways, I guess, that we talked about today for you to stay in touch without calling to check in. We've got a good 10 or 11 ways that you can stay engaged and keep your prospect engaged in the process. Keep them thinking about you, where you could stay top of mind and separate and differentiate yourself from your competitors. Now, the thing that I want you to know, we're actually going to be talking a lot about these things that I talked about today. In fact, there's one area in particular where I was talking about evidence, and I said I didn't want to give it all away because I'm actually going to be talking about it this Thursday, the 18th, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And we're doing a webinar called 12 Ways to Safeguard Your Deal, right? I mean, kind of important that we have like ways to safeguard the deal, because as we talked about, the deal can like crash and burn very, very quickly. And we don't want to do that. So here's what we're going to be talking about. I want you to hear this, right? Just give me your attention for a moment, if you will. We're going to talk about, first of all, how to get in front of people who have a higher degree of urgency. I mean, isn't that where it starts? Talking with people that actually, like, they really need what you're selling and they understand that they really need it. To me, that's ideal. How to get all of the stakeholders into the meetings and access to them without offending the person, because this is a sensitive thing. How do we do it without offending them and making them feel inferior, like we're calling them like Skippy in the mailroom, like I don't need to talk to you. Get me the head honcho here. We're going to talk about how to immediately take control of the selling cycle that you have with various prospects. We're also going to talk about one non-negotiable FedEx that you need to send out before every one of your meetings. And there's like 3 to 4 different things that you need to include in this FedEx. In fact, we refer to it as a pre-appointment kit. We're going to talk about 5 types of questions that move the deal forward. By now, you should know how I roll. I'm not going to be teaching you any of that open and close question stuff. To me, that's a trip to Google. You don't need to pay me for that. Also, too, it just doesn't like excite me at all talking about that shit. Seriously, it's about as basic can be. I've got got five kick-ass types of questions that I'm going to be sharing. So that's one of the things you can count on from me, my no stupid question tutorial guarantee. Say that 10 times fast. We're going to talk about what to say and what to do when somebody tells you, hey, we're going to be taking three different bids. Five ways to keep your prospect engaged and focus on you, even between meetings. That's kind of what we talked about today, but I've got five more ways that you have we didn't even discuss. Why? Because I don't want to give the shit away. Sorry, got bills to pay, kids. But anyway, how to maneuver your competitors into a defensive position without bad-mouthing them. That's really, really important. We need to find a way to educate the prospects that we have to make a better decision without bad-mouthing our competitors. So we're going to talk about that. Now, to learn more, I'd like for you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/May17. That's all lowercase. yoursalesplaybook.com/May17. But here's the deal, folks. Today is the 14th. We're going to be doing this on the 18th. If ever there was a time not to procrastinate, it's right now. Don't wait till the last minute because you know what's going to happen. I have so many things, right? I mean, I'm right there with you guys, man. I have so many things going on. Here it is. It's Mother's Day on top of it. I have great intentions of doing so many different things. All of a sudden, life creeps in. And then how many times, like, so many times I can think of where all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my God, that was 2 weeks ago. I had wanted to attend that or I wanted to do that, whatever. So don't have that moment. If this is something that appeals to you and you want to take better control of your sales cycle, better control of the deals that you work so hard to get in front of, and by the way, like, let's get a few more of these deals across the finish line before the end of the year. That would be kind of cool, right? For some of you, this could make the difference between getting the bonus, ranking higher, making President's Club. And we're only talking $99, kids. I mean, it's not like something where, like, you have to, like, sell off a kidney. And by the way, I recognize I refer to you guys as kids twice, but I don't know. It's just the mood that I'm in. I'll call myself a kid. I'm a crazy kid. I'm a kid who never grew up. What can I tell you? But anyway, please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/May17. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.